What's up, everybody? Welcome in to our special all-in post show along with CJ Taylor. I am Jonathan Hood. Thanks so much for being part of this podcast and this special show. Taylor, as always, I appreciate it. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you for having me, as always.
Crazy, right? Unbelievable show. 81,035 in attendance, a new attendance pro wrestling record. That's just a huge day for all of us as pro wrestling fans, but definitely for AEW.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, Tony Khan's got to be, you know, popping bottles if he's into that type of thing. Because this is just an amazing night for, like you said, for pro wrestling, for AEW in particular, to be able to, you know, get 81,000 into that stadium. And they were rocking from start to finish. I mean, there was really, really no drop off in this event. It was amazing to watch.
CJ, the thing is, and this has always been this way probably for a while now, but like the tribalism that's there for pro wrestling of I'm a WWE guy, I'm an AEW guy, I'm a New Japan person. You know, ultimately, this is a win for pro wrestling. Now, I don't care about the minority of fans out there on social media that's, you know, pouting and got their arms folded. So like, that wasn't my company. That's not a real number. 81,035 paid, to the point where we kept hearing it's going to be over 81,000, yeah. Right? That seems like more the legit number than just like gimmick numbers we've heard. 93,000, 95,000. Like, it's like, yeah, you kept saying 81,000, it ended up 81 and some change. Their pro wrestling record. Just watching the people in Wembley, the people in London, the people that traveled to see this show, that's so dope that this happened today. And it's just a win for all of us. You know, doesn't matter who you root for, you should be rooting for pro wrestling. That's the bottom line.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. I mean, you go on social media and you just see all of this, you know, back and forth between AEW fans and WWE fans. It really takes away from what we all come to watch this thing for in the first place, which is we enjoy entertainment. It's a male soap opera. We love it. We love the storylines. We love the athletes that do it. I am not in this whole AEW versus WWE thing. It's just wrestling to me. And as long as there's good wrestling on my TV, you know, each and every week, I'm watching it.
Yeah, you talk so much about how this is a male soap opera. There's no question it's a male soap opera, not only in the ring, but outside the ring as well. We're going to go through step by step this card, but there's some drama. There's all Pepsi Phil always involved. So as you're watching this show, CJ, I'm informing you about this story that came across. And if you did not see this, if you're locked in on just the show, I can understand that. But I got this here from Fightful Select. Yeah. Okay, here's the story. CM Punk and Jack Perry had an altercation backstage at All In. Details are few and far in between at the moment, but we have learned that Jack Perry and CM Punk had an altercation shortly before CM Punk went to the ring for his AEW All In match. Jack Perry was on right before him and did a spot on a car window and said, it's real glass, cry me a river. This was shot, definitely a shot at CM Punk, who had a confrontation at an AEW Collision taping this summer over Perry's insistence on using real glass for a spot on the show. I do recall this. We're told that Perry wasn't happy about how the situation was relayed publicly by those close to CM Punk. Goes on to say that we have learned at least one side of the story, which claims that Jack Perry approached CM Punk backstage and stepped in his face and bumped Punk. Punk was said to have pushed Perry. Perry allegedly came at Punk and got choked. We haven't heard of a particular kind of choke or who broke things up. Please note this is only one side of the story. Now, Miro sees this because Miro was on way early in the show, and he said he was on Twitter, and he said, this was fake and untrue. And other versions allege that Punk threw a punch at Perry. Also, PW Insider, who does a great job as well over the years, has reported that Jack Perry was sent away from the venue and CM Punk was still at Wembley. Your thoughts, sir, of Pepsi Phil, again, being in the mix.
No, Phil. Once again, where there's controversy, CM Punk is usually right there in the mix. So does this mean now that Jack Perry is now barred from Collision, you know, for the lifespan of the TV show?
So he's not a collider. Is that what you're saying? He's not a collider now?
Yeah, he's not a collider now. I mean, listen, it's CM Punk. I mean, we've been through this, you know, numerous times with him. He ignites controversy. He's going to say what he wants to say. He's really not going to care about anybody else's feelings about his thoughts. salute to Jack Perry for getting in his face and, you know, speaking his mind as well. But don't expect Jack Perry on Collision anytime soon.
I mean, we still got to find out what the full story is. And we never really get it because all these incidents happen. It's only as he said, she said, it's two sides of the story, all this stuff. I'm not sure exactly what the story is, CJ, but the point is like, just because CM Punk's involved, and I've said this before on Good Karma Wrestling, so, you know, you have to decide if you're Tony Khan, is the juice worth the squeeze, right? I mean, no matter how polarizing Punk is, it's just the fact is that he's always involved in something. And you can take it two ways. You can take it the WWE way, in which it's like, okay, we're going to make money with this, and then we're going to release the guy. Or you can do it the UFC way and just say, you know what, controversy creates cash, no matter if somebody's an asshole or not. Keep them on the roster because it's interesting. There's two ways to do business in that regard.
Yeah. And I mean, if we're going to go back a full year, the fact that no money has been made of the whole Elite brawl out situation, you know, really speaks to Tony Khan's, you know, incompetence in putting this thing and getting these guys in a room and figuring this thing out and how to make money off of this. So now you got another situation now with Jack Perry, where again, there's money to be made off of this, but whether or not Tony Khan wants to do it and, you know, be an actual like owner of a wrestling promotion and, you know, say, hey, I don't care how the hell you two feel about each other. Let's get in the ring and make some money off of this. But we'll see if Tony Khan, you know, actually has the stones to do that. Or if again, once again, the inmates running the asylum.
I mean, ultimately, that's what we're seeing here. But again, that won't sully our great time looking at All In. And we have a poll question that's up. GKW underscore wrestling is where you could follow along on X as well as on Instagram at Good Karma Wrestling. But the poll question's up on X, and that is, what is your letter grade for All In? Is it A, B, C, or D? You can put your vote in and also give your response to what you saw at Wembley Stadium in London. Of course, Good Karma Wrestling, our show is every Thursday, 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 Pacific. You can check it out on YouTube as well, youtube.com. Look for Good Karma Wrestling right there. Hit that subscribe button. We're over 400 subscribers. That may not seem a lot, but for where we started, we're doing well, and it's because of you. So thanks so much for being part of it. Before we get into the show also, so we talked about the attendance and talked about Jack Perry versus CM Punk. Get it in the ring, Tony. Get it in the ring if you're going to do something, right?
Please.
So we saw a lot of Mercedes Moné.
Not about that.
I'm talking about just seeing.
Yeah, I know.
Never mind about your wet dreams. I'm talking about the young lady that's in this. She was in the house, and they kept showing her on TV. CJ, what do you think?
That was not an accident. I do not believe that was an accident. I believe that was Tony Khan's way of, you know, kind of extending the olive branch. Say, hey, Mercedes, once you're done with the New Japan thing, you know, women's roster is right here waiting for you if you want to, you know, come in and have some other matches that you may be thinking about doing.
There's a reason why she was on the camera more than once.
Yes, absolutely. It's the grand pitch. It's the big sale. To get Mercedes Moné into AEW would be a huge feather in the cap for Tony Khan. It would ultimately bring a huge spotlight onto the women's division. And again, now you've got a whole host of matches that you could potentially put on Mercedes Moné and Harold Shida. Ruby Soho's there. You know, Tony Storm is there. I mean, the amount of matches are endless. But yeah, keep putting that spotlight on Mercedes because eventually I think she'll get over to AEW.
No question. A new set of opponents. as you mentioned, and there's a lot of really terrific wrestlers, women wrestlers in AEW, but she brings that cachet, though. She brings a little something mm-hmm. extra because of now her WWE experience, her New Japan experience, a little bit on the indies, and then being able to do that. That would just be awesome. I'd love to see her in AEW for sure. So let's go through the card here because, again, I'm grateful that we're able to see something like we saw from AEW. And it the idea that you have 81,000 people and, like, with that number, and they'll be able to see the fans enjoying themselves in London. And then the announcement, spoiler alert, they're going to be there this time next year for another show. I mean, I would imagine the tickets will sell even faster now that you know that, I believe it was August 26th of next year, that they're going to have another show. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah. They will be printing money come this time next year for All in London, especially after the card that they put on tonight. They can just put that on auto and do that type of show again next year. And I mean, the crowd there in the UK, they're big. They've always been hot, you know, for professional wrestling. So, Tony Khan just, you know, back out the Brinks truck. I mean, you're just going to get a whole ton of money for next year.
Just, it's amazing. Okay, so 0 Hour, the pre-show with Jungle Boy, Jack Perry against Hook. Hook gets his FTW championship back. It's a match that I think that you need to watch, CJ, because CJ watched the main show. This was on X for everyone to watch if you didn't see it on Bleacher Report. It's a match that's worth it because I think it's one of the best matches on the show, actually. And here's why, because Jack Perry comes out full of piss and vinegar, clearly pissed off because of what happened with CM Punk. So he had a little bit extra going for him. He takes on a Hook. And so this matchup takes place pretty much outside of the ring where there was some spots, man. And I got to go back to my notes and look at the spots that were taken there on the limo was pretty stiff. I mean, some great action outside. It's probably one of the better Jack Perry matches I've seen as far as the physicality outside the ring. People got to watch this. This was the FTW rules, and it was just off the Hook. And so it was great that Hook is able to win, but Jack Perry still is strong. Even though FTW, I mean, it's not a real championship, but it is, you know, in the eyes of Taz and for Hook. But Jack Perry was very impressive, comes in the limo, and they're like, what's up with this limo? And the driver runs out of there, and they did some spots through the windshield and on top of the limo that are pretty strong. So Hook retains the FTW championship or wins it back for a second time.
All right. Hook and Jack Perry, you talk about two of your younger entertainers for AEW. Continue to look for these two. They are incredible entertainers, incredible wrestlers. I really definitely go back and look at that match for 0 Hour because I'm sure they put on a show. Continue to look out for these two. Are they in the typical realm of, you know, your typical, you know, wrestlers? No. But again, I'm all about the performance and I'm all about the story they put into the ring. So I'll definitely take a look at that match.
Yeah, I thought the same thing. It's just like watching those two. It's like the young guys in this company. They'll all come up together. Hook and Jack Perry, that's pretty good for a pre-show. And then, of course, the Aussie Open, they lose the ROH Tag Team Championships to MJF and Adam Cole. I think that was probably the easiest bet on the board if you're betting this in Vegas because you got to continue to extend the story. You've heard me, CJ, and you've written about this as well on your blog about storytelling in AEW. There's a difference between AEW and WWE in this regard as far as storytelling versus having the best matches. And so from this standpoint, the storytelling continued because, yes, was it odd for the main event to be in the pre-show for ROH Tag Team Champions? And again, to a common fan, what is ROH? And I have it, but a lot of people are like, okay, I have a limited wrestling bandwidth that I can't watch everything. And so what does those tag team titles mean? Well, they beat a really good tag team in Aussie Open, and that's just extending the story with MJF and Adam Cole winning.
Yeah, and I know some people were looking for something screwy to happen in that match, you know, that leads into the main event for the AEW title later on, but a little surprising for some that they, you know, were able to keep the story going and they continued their whole best friends, better than you, baby, and then win the tag titles. So now that adds a little more intrigue as you get into the main card of, okay, what's going to happen in this main match now? And that, again, like you talk about, builds the story, continues the story. Now there's an extra intrigue because it's already going to be an excellent match, you know, between those two. But now this, that they have these tag titles on their, you know, around their waist going into their match, now what's really going to happen? And so, yeah, that sets the perfect stage to get you to the main card.
Okay, so speaking of that main card, we got CM Punk against Samoa Joe. Okay, so it was interesting is that I wasn't sure, was this for the Real World Championship or was this for Samoa Joe's TV championship? Because he is the champion of television, after all. I just think, here's what's interesting. So CM Punk has become John Cena in this regard. Like, it's going to be 50-50 as far as who's booing him and who's cheering him. And so ultimately, CM Punk wins in that regard because you could tell this was a Samoa Joe crowd. They were into Samoa Joe. There's a lot of respect for him. And then, like, when CM Punk tried to, I guess he's trying to do Terry Funk. I guess he was trying to do that. And it's kind of like the audience just spit that out. They didn't like that. And so, you know, CM Punk ends up winning. I think it should have been Samoa Joe going over to kind of extend their feud. But no, CM Punk wins. What'd you think of the match overall?
Overall, I mean, it wasn't the classics we're used to seeing from those two. No, these are wily old veterans that are more towards the tail end of their careers rather than being at the apex of it. But overall, I thought it was a good way to start the card. You were right. As CM Punk came out, you heard the cheers, people with the CM Punk signs up, and then you also heard the boos because it was clearly a Joe crowd there. There was a couple of fun spots where the Hurricanrana from CM Punk, which was something that he kind of pulled out of the mothballs, and then the whole spot where CM Punk goes for a move, Joe gets moves out the way. Those fun spots that Joe did. That second one where he Punk missed and Joe walked away, and then he flung him into the announce table and busted Punk open. That was a pretty fun spot too. Again, overall, solid match. Solid way to begin the card. Punk picking up the win. Probably you could have guessed that one. I'm like you. I'd much rather Samoa Joe go over. I'm Samoa Joe guy. Always have been. Just to see him go over would have been cool for me. But you know, all in all, it was still a pretty good match to start off.
All right, keep me in order here because I think we go to the Golden Elite. Right? Is that the match against the Bullet Club and Takeshita?
Yes.
Okay, let's talk about that. So Omega, Ibushi, and Adam Page against Takeshita and Bullet Club Gold, Jay White, and Juice Robinson. What'd you think of that one?
I thought, again, another solid match. I mean, kind of a back and forth pinfalls, you know, close pinfalls. You really didn't know who's going to go over. I'm thinking more than likely the Elite because it's, you know, it's Kenny Omega. Again, to have Bullet Club go over was obviously the crowd was not happy with that. When the three count went, they were clearly in the corner of Kenny Omega and Golden Elite. But it was a lot of back and forth. Kenny had the guns get involved too. And sidebar, the guns and how they were able to kind of reinvent themselves, you know, into this kind of badass tag team now, you know, with their entrances and things like that. That's just a little side point there. But yeah, they got involved in the match. Didn't figure into the end of the match as Takeshita got the win with a roll up and a little pull up on the tights on Kenny Omega of all people. So I was a little surprising also that Kenny Omega, you know, took the pinfall on that one. But so, again, yeah, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, like I just think that out of these six guys, that I need to see some single matches and some stories tied up here. And, like, I need to see Takeshita against Kenny Omega. Like, I know that Omega especially in AEW, is not into all these, you know, solo classics like we saw in New Japan. But, I mean, yeah. If there is a problem where Takeshita has replaced Omega next to Don Callis, then I need for that to, not in a six-man, not in a tag team, I need to see those two go at it, because I think that would be a really great matchup.
Oh, I think so, too. And it's got to happen sooner rather than later, you know, before the steam, you know, comes off of it. I mean, what's the point of introducing, you know, that whole story if you're not going to get a payoff for it? So, those two have to clash in the ring at some point. Like I said, sooner rather than later, Tony, book it. Maybe next week, Chicago.
Chicago would be great. That'd be great to have it. Yeah, as soon as possible. And the thing is, like with Jay White, you know, these guys, CJ, are having fun. Jay White and Juice Robinson. And here's why I say that is because of all the brutality, and they're getting paid well, all the stuff they go through in New Japan. And they go in AEW, they're not comedy characters, but it's a little lighter. And we know that all these guys can go, but it just feels like, hey, it's my opportunity to show a little bit more personality. We can get over that way. And we don't have to be able to just bloody ourselves and beat ourselves for 45 minutes a night. We can actually be able to get over with this crowd. I can't wait for Jay White to be able to really blossom. Juice Robinson already is a crazy character. He is quintessential Joliet, Illinois. There's no doubt about that. I mean, you talk about southwest suburbs of Chicago. That's that. You're looking to figure out who Jay White is. That's or who Juice Robinson is. That's Juice Robinson. He is just quintessential Joliet.
Yeah, he's definitely that guy. Yes. Definitely looking forward to more singles matches from all six of these guys. You're absolutely right in that regard. Jay White is now kind of able to be a little freer. You're seeing it more, you know, week in and week out on TV. He looks like he's having the time of his life right now, and that's good for him.
And so I look forward to seeing, you know, these guys being able to be in these in some long form matches if possible, because I know they can all be able to give a lot. And I love the crowd response. Golden League comes out there. I mean, it's just, it's great. So there's that match. So what is third on here? Is this the Stadium Stampede? Is that where we go?
No, it's actually the third match was for the AEW World Tag Team Championship.
World Tag Team Championship.
With FTR and the Young Bucks.
Okay, because I got scattered notes here. So FTR and the Young Bucks. So what did you think of the AEW World Tag Team Championships? The finish is exactly what I thought it was going to be, because I said on our previous show on Good Karma Wrestling, I said, listen, you're the Young Bucks. You guys are vice presidents of the company. You're going to be around for a while. You resign. If FTR wins, that takes no shine off of the Young Bucks. We already know how great that they are. I'm late to the party. Mm-hmm. I will raise my hand and say I was late to the party with Young Bucks because I didn't get it. Now I understand.
I'll raise my hand.
You too?
I'll raise my hand too. Absolutely. For the longest time, I did not get the Young Bucks at all.
Yes.
I just thought it was Spot Fest Central. And you know, there was really no psychology, no storytelling with their matches. This particular match, they told an absolutely fabulous story. But in this match, I loved it. It was probably up there as one of my favorite matches of the night between these two teams. I was a little concerned whether the Bucks' ego might get in the way in terms of how the match would end up going in their favor. But the right team went over. In FTR, and they got, I think they really need a run with these World Tag Team titles and just take on, you know, all the other tag teams in AEW, you know, really just to show just how great they are. Bunch of false finishes. I'm looking at my notes. Looked like at one point I was like, the Bucks are going over, you know, at one point, but then they kick out and then they got a second shatter machine for the win. It was really good from start to finish. And from the Bucks, I will give them that credit. From a storytelling perspective, they did it. This is one of the things that's been, I think, at least for me, has been a criticism of the Bucks, is being able to tell a story with their matches. And they told an absolutely great story with this.
It's exactly what my disconnect was with the Young Bucks for a long time. Like, you appreciate the action. But what you wanted is for you to be able to say, okay, what story are you trying to tell? Now, again, for some, it's just like, thank you for the action for 20 minutes or 30 minutes when they're in there. But, you know, this, at least it was laid out. Okay, so this is the rubber match between these two tag teams. Mm-hmm. You are off, you're the office. Does the office win as a vice president, a couple of vice presidents, or does FTR win? I love tag team wrestling. I might be one of the few, but I love tag team wrestling when it's really great. And yeah. I just think that those two, those four put on a great show. Didn't surprise me that that was the case. I think the finish was perfect. And this, and by the way, see, this will not be the last time that we'll see those four in the ring together because they make music together and it's great.
No, it definitely will not be the last time you see these two teams in the ring. This is one of these kind of, you know, fight forever, you know, type of rivalries between these two. It was much like in WWE back in 2017, 2018, the New Day and the Usos went back and forth with each other, just putting out banger after banger after banger. This is what you're going to get between FTR and the Bucks because they're both teams are really just that good. They can put on these type of matches.
All right. Do we get the Stadium Stampede yet?
Yes, now we get to the Stadium Stampede, and oh boy.
What? Bad?
if you're a fan of blood and plenty of it, you're a fan of like sickening moments and plenty of them, this match was for you. boy.
This is why Jon Moxley could not wait to get out of WWE. Because before WWE, he was in CZW and a couple of these other organizations where he could bleed and use thumbtacks and all this other stuff. And it's kind of like, you know, like I understand that they do car crash wrestling. I know Moxley loves that. I know some fans love that. But it's kind of like, okay, so when does it stop being special? Like because I've seen it on Dynamite. I've seen it on Collision. I've seen it on pay-per-view. So it's like, so when does it stop being special? Like, okay, so Moxley's out there, so he's going to bleed. Again, it's something to be said about when you do bleed or when you do use glass or when you do use these things, it's special. But when I see it often, it's like, oh, this is the match where they're going to use everything in the ring. And it's kind of like, it seems like that cuts off a section of the audience. I guess if you're into it, it's awesome. But if you're not, it's kind of like, well, it's not special anymore. And I know I sound old school in that regard, but that does matter. Like, so when you see Jon Moxley, when you see the Blackpool Combat Club, look for violence. Violence is fine. Got no problem with that. Mm-hmm. But it's kind of like the same stuff. Like, what else, CJ, can you use besides glass and thumbtacks and chairs and tables and, like, barbed wire, you know, 2x4s? It's like, at some point, you run out of things to use at the Home Depot.
Yeah, absolutely. And wasn't there just a blood and guts match, you know, recently where, you know, most, if not all of these tools were also being used? You're right. It does kind of take away from the novelty of it. And then if you're going to have, you know, these type of matches, you know, Stadium Stampede or a blood and guts, it needs to be like a blow off to something. And then you kind of move on to, you know, whatever the next story is. Jon Moxley and bleeding, they just go hand in hand. If he's not bleeding in the match, now I've got problems. Because that's his MO. He bleeds. But yeah, there was some spots in here. Santana power bombing Penta, you know, onto the chairs in the ring was a pretty sick spot. Orange Cassidy getting stabbed by a fork. I mean, it was just insanity for, you know, 20 plus minutes. And like I said, if you're into just car wrecks and just blood and guts and violence, then that was an awesome match for you. I don't know what the end result of all that was, but it was just a car wreck.
Yeah, it was. I mean, Jon Moxley, Claudio Castagnoli, Wheeler Yuta, Santana and Ortiz. Santana and Ortiz, they don't like each other, but yet they can do business with each other. They legit don't like each other, but they find a way to work together. Eddie Kingston comes out there in his Ewing 33 jersey, bleeding. Orange Cassidy bleeding. Like, you know, Penta, best friend. I mean, just just craziness. And you know, Eddie Kingston is the guy that stands out to me the most, because he's the one that wants you to know, hey, what I'm doing is real. Just so you know, like, everything I'm doing, everything's legit. Yeah. I don't like these people. There actually is a problem between him and Claudio Castagnoli. But again, you got to be office, you got to be business and do the right things. But he's a guy that takes it seriously. And so he's into it as well. I guess what it comes down to is, if you don't like the violence, appreciate the stars that's in the ring trying to provide, you know, entertainment. That's exactly what we saw.
Yeah, kudos to all 10 of them for being able to do this match and take the type of punishment that they all took in that. I mean, I feel for Renee. Because anytime you have to sit there and watch your husband take, like, skewers, you know, dug into your husband's skull and all these other type of things that happen to him, like, she at some point has to be like, all right, John, knock it off.
No, there is no knock it off. There is no knock it off. Like, yes, there should be something where she says, okay, John, you know, it's us. You know, I'm a wife. We've got a child here. Do you think that this is smart for the long-term health of yourself and our family? No, she just allows it to happen. Like, I couldn't do that to my significant other, but it's a living for him. I mean, it's like breathing for him. Bleeding is like breathing for him.
Absolutely. I mean, if it works for her household, great. But man, that was just a lot of unneeded and unnecessary punishment for all 10 of those guys in that ring.
So before we move on, this Stadium Stampede versus other Stadium Stampedes. Now, of course, you know, during the pandemic, a little bit after that, we're used to seeing the Stadium Stampede, like, no fans in Jacksonville, but yet all these spots that they can edit and all this stuff. Where is this rate amongst the other Stadium Stampedes that they've done?
This one was pretty up there just for the spots itself. I mean, I was sitting there watching it, and once the skewers went into Moxley's head, I was like, okay, I see where this is going. this is going to be the clear definition of just wild. It's pretty up there in terms of some of their other, you know, just crash car matches they've had. It's pretty good. And again, when you've got John Moxley involved, you can expect these type of things.
Don't forget to check out the podcast available wherever you get your podcasts. Look for Good Karma Wrestling. Hit that subscribe button also on YouTube as well, youtube.com. Look for Good Karma Wrestling there. And we have our show every Thursday, 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 Pacific, live on YouTube. All right. What is next? Because I got scattered notes everywhere. Do we get to Saraya?
Yes, the women's world title, the four-way, was the next match with Saraya, Hikaru Shida, Hikaru, Toni Storm, and
Dr. Britt Baker.
Dr. Britt Baker, yes. This one was a bit of a sprint. I noticed that they probably did not get as much time as the other matches on the main card. But it was still some good spots. Toni Storm accidentally knocking out Saraya's mom, you know, outside of the ring was a pretty funny spot that pretty much, I guess, has led now to the end of the Social Outcast, maybe.
Yeah. Okay. So, yes, I think so, too. But at least the story was set up where, as you mentioned, like Toni Storm, who, by the way, this character is great. I mean, she's a 1950s.
Absolutely.
She's turned into a 1950s actress. It's perfect, right?
Yeah.
The old robe, the look. She already has that look with her hair. She looks like an old time, you know, old time actress. And her promos are perfect. This is a Toni Storm we haven't seen before. And it gives a little character, and I like it, you know, like a Betty Grable, like old school stuff. And I think it's great.
Yeah.
And so she does that to Saraya's mom, and we know the Saraya story. No, not that story. I don't mean that story with Brad Maddox.
No, the other story.
I don't mean Brad Maddox now. That's not what I mean. I want to make sure it's very clear here. I'm not talking about, you know, New Day Rocks and Brad Maddox in there. No. Which is, by the way, available now if you want to check that out. It's still there. CJ watches at least once a week. But I just want you to know that Saraya with her family there. And of course, her mom was a wrestler in the UK. And so just the idea that her family's there. Saraya wins. Let me tell you, I understand why she won, because they're in the UK.
Yeah.
I don't know what kind of champion she's going to be, because I think it's just been okay, her return to AEW. Like, her first match against Dr. Britt Baker, Baker walked her through the match. Walked her through it. Mm-hmm. Like, you saw this, right? I mean, yeah. It's like a year ago.
Yeah.
And she's walking her through it. And so I'm watching that, and I see this four-way, and I think that was pretty cool. Tony Storm with that sprint, which does that. And then, of course, you know, Saraya cheats, and the Tony Storm gets the spray in her face so Saraya can get the mm-hmm. pinfall. I mean, so I like that trio, but looks like them, as you mentioned, might be a little bit of dissension with this group now.
Yeah, it looks that way. I kind of agree with you with the call of Saraya going over in her home country. It's kind of the feel good moment, you know, so she can celebrate, you know, with her family and her countrymen in England. I'm a little disappointed because Hikaru had such a short run with the yes. AEW title. I was looking for a bit of a longer run with her. But, you know, who knows? Maybe she can get it back. I don't know if this will be a transitional championship run for Saraya, you know, once they get back to the States. But I kind of wanted to see Hikaru go over in this match. It was a cool match, you know, nonetheless. You know, you got the ending that you wanted with Saraya celebrating with her family. Her run up to this point was a little shaky. So we'll see what else happens for her. I was a little bit more interested though in Hikaru's, because I think she deserved the run. Hikaru definitely deserved a bigger, longer run with the belt, and she could have had some other matches that she could put on too. But we'll see what else happens.
Yeah, I don't like the idea that Hikaru Shida was a transitional champion. You could have done that. You could have done that a different way. I think that people are going to get it. I'll put it this way: I prefer her as champion than the other champion that we see on AEW. The other women's champion that we see on AEW. I think that Hikaru Shida had an opportunity to really be able to go some places here. She's a very, very solid wrestler, and I just think that. She shouldn't have been a transitional champion. Saraya, now I don't know if she's going to be a babyface or heel, or how to explain this in the next few weeks, but it just kind of like, to me, she just should have the opportunity to have the championship a little longer so we can see her in other matches.
Yeah, there was also another spot in that match where Ruby Soho tried to come out and play like peacemaker between the two, and I think Tony accidentally took her out as well, and she ends up storming out of the ring. It definitely looks like that thing with Social Outcasts is imploding in Saraya's face, and she's a heel. I mean, she did some heel-type tactics to win. So, we'll see. I actually prefer Saraya as a heel at this point going forward. But, it looks like the whole Social Outcast thing. It also gives Tony Storm a chance to really dive into this, you know, 1950s, you know, starlet character that she's, like, really just sinking her teeth into. I'm loving it, by the way.
It's very entertaining, for sure. So we'll keep our eyes on the women's championship. She got the champ. Saraya gets the championship because they're in the UK. Awesome. All right.
Yes, sir.
So then we go to Sting and Darby Allin against Christian Cage and Swerve Strickland. There's some controversy there we'll talk about in a moment. But first, okay, I'm here to tell you, CJ, that I really think that AEW's done a better job with Sting than WWE did with The Undertaker. I really do. Because Sting's not there out there every week wrestling, but he does make appearances. Mm-hmm. And then when he does make an appearance, he does something crazy like, I don't know, become Joker Sting or do the damnedest thing, putting his whole body on Swerve Strickland right through a table. Like that's wild to do that to Swerve Strickland. I mean, at his age, right? He's almost 65.
Yeah.
Because of the face paint and because of the hair dye and because he's still in great shape, you don't know he's 60, almost 65. But the point is, though, is that the reaction, it starts with the music, right? The music comes, mm-hmm. then you get the Firefly Funhouse effect because the arena's dark and you get the lights on. I'm like, that whole scene, the entrance was cool for Sting and Darby Allin.
Oh yeah, I mean that was really a cool sight to see, an awesome tribute to Bray Wyatt, and it was a little emotional as well, but just a cool, such a cool entrance for Sting and Darby Allin, and then the match itself, like you said, Sting. Every time Sting wrestles, which is not often, which is actually good for him, Sting always is doing like something. And I think after that first table spot, you know, off the apron, I was like, no, he's not going to do this again, is he? Yeah, he is going to do this again. Because you need to get it right. And so he does the thing off the apron again and gets swerved through the table. And, you know, the crowd goes nuts. And, you know, that's Sting. That's his love for the business. It's his love for entertaining. And like you said, the fact that he's still doing this in his mid-60s, still able to move around as well as he does in his mid-60s, that was pretty awesome. Darby also taking a dive, you know, off and missing Strickland and then hitting the casket, like, flush on his back. I was just like, that was a wicked spot. It was at that point I thought, well, might Christian and Swerve go over, but no, the right team went over here with Sting and Darby Allin. It was a pretty cool match overall. I like that match as well.
So there's only a few places on earth that really get it as far as we as fans. Mm-hmm. And you know, there's New York, smart crowd. Chicago, yeah. Los Angeles, right? There's certain places that understand what's really going on. Toronto's another one. Detroit's another mm-hmm. one. You go to the UK, like, everybody's smart. Everybody understands what's going on. They read everything. Yeah. They watch everything. But you get Christian Cage and Sting in the ring together, and the crowd chants TNA. Did you pick up on that? They chanted TNA, CJ. I'm like, now wait a minute now. Okay. Oh, there was only a few people that watched TNA? No, everybody was watching TNA because this is in the era they're talking about is when you had Bischoff and Hogan and you had Flair and you had, like, you know, AJ Styles and you had all the stars, right? So, yeah. To a London crowd, for them to think, wait a minute, that's Christian Cage and Sting in the ring. That reminds me of TNA, TNA, TNA. And I'm like, of all things, right? How smart is that crowd to be like, we haven't seen you guys together since you were in the asylum in Nashville or whatever, right? That's crazy. But the fans understand. They know. They're smart.
Yeah, that was I instantly started chuckling when they were screaming that. I was like, all right, you know, the London, UK crowd, you know, big thumbs up. You guys understand. You get it. You understand what this thing called professional wrestling is about, to be able to bring that up. You know, because if you're an outsider watching that, you think, oh my God, this is such a cool moment. You know, Christian and Sting, we've never seen. Yeah, we have seen this before. And that's why a smart crowd can pick that up instantly and make that chant. So again, kudos to the London crowd. They were great all night.
I mean, I'm watching it and I'm like, oh yeah, that's right. I did watch them in TNA. Yes, I did see them. Like, it, I mean, I, like in the back of my mind, like, yeah, but just for them to be able to scream it out, hey, I'm in London, but I remember you guys. You guys were in TNA together. Just like, it just shows you that UK crowd. It's just amazing. Yeah. All the bumps that Sting took and that Darby took. You know, we talked about that Stadium Stampede matchup, but those two, I mean, as we mentioned, Sting's not that out there every week, but he's willing to do things we didn't see in Mid-South in 87, 88, not with Ric Flair in the NWA. That whole run in WCW, that whole run in TNA, his short run WWE, we didn't see Sting do any of these things. But now that he's, you know, old and gray, and maybe in some places, he's doing these bumps. And Darby Allin, dude, that's wild that when you take that coffin bump, you're on the top rope and you land back first onto a coffin. That's wild. I mean, that. Does he understand? Like, you only have so many bumps in your bump card. I mean, it's awesome, but man, I like to see what he looks like at age 50.
Man, his medical bills once he's done Wrestling is whew, that oh boy. I mean, he's young, so he can take those bumps, you know, but how many more of those that he can actually do? Sting should not be taking any bumps like that whatsoever. Like, right. he's got to stop that, or at least, you know, put it in some way where you just don't think, oh my God, is Sting broken, you know, after this bump. But Darby, he's just one of those cats that throws caution to the wind, you know, when he's out there, and he's willing to try just about anything to make a spot work. But like you said, 20 years from now, I don't know how his back is going to be, but kudos for him taking those bumps.
What did you think of Swerve's entrance?
You know, Swerve had one of the cool entrances of the evening, but that's Swerve. Swerve is always going to try to, you know, do something to make his interest pop and make his entrances, you know, look really cool. So, you know, Swerve also gets it. He gets the whole point of being an entertainer. And so he always wants to do something to leave you, you know, entertained. And so his entrance coming out, got a pop out there. So yeah, Swerve definitely gets it. I really want to see him get a bigger push, because I think he's one of those talents that kind of flies under the radar, but man, is he really good at what he does.
Yeah, like the entrance was cool, and obviously Swerve Strickland's a terrific wrestler. He needs to start winning here. It'd be nice to get some wins here at some point. Like, he's not some veteran that you can just roll over. He's been in wrestling for a long time, but he's still very young. And so mm-hmm. they want this to really work. I mean, this dude's bringing Rick Ross in. And by the way, I mean, if he's got that relationship with Rick Ross, I want to see him more than once. Bring him in. He was very entertaining when he was on AEW.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, keep that going. You know, why stop with just a couple of appearances here and there? You know, get Swerve in a sustained push, and you know, we can see more of it.
So as we talk about this, there's one little controversy with this match that we're going to talk about in just a second. Mm-hmm. Tony Khan, according to Fightful Select, Tony Khan reiterates the $81,305 number is paid, legit paid. He says he'd estimate about 90,000 were there because of comps, ushers, ticket takers, and the like. So, I mean, he's got the books. He says 81,000 legit paid. And you know how this works, CJ. It's like you can give a number, and a lot of this could mm-hmm. be comp. It'll be butts in seats, but not paid, that kind of mm-hmm. thing. So this is what Tony Khan is saying, because the press conference is taking place as we do our live all-in special right here on Good Karma Wrestling. One other thing, Tony Khan confirms that there was a physical incident tonight before the pay-per-view went on the air. He can't comment on it. It's under investigation. So he was asked, and it's under investigation. He can't comment on it. Another one. So, again, going back to Pepsi Phil, dude, at some point you got to think, whatever happened, if it involves CM Punk, the juice is not worth the squeeze. And I'm a Chicago guy. Like, I respect CM Punk as a performer, but this bullshit behind the scenes, you can't keep having this and think that the company's going to run smooth. Somebody's got to be an adult in the room and just say, okay, another incident, Phil, another one? Let me ask you a question, CJ. How often would WWE allow this, or some other company, or just your job? How long would they, or my job? How long would they allow this to happen?
Well, with my job, definitely zero.
Yeah.
But Vince, maybe once. If it happens again, like somebody's getting fired, or you know, Vince is pulling these people in the rings. Like, look, I don't give a damn what goes on. This nonsense stops, and we put this in the ring to make money. Tony has to be the adult in the room. Has to. He's the, at the end of the day, he's the owner. He's the bookmaker. He has to be the one to rein in everyone and say, enough of this nonsense. You're too many of these instances, you know, backstage, outside of the ring, are really, okay, they say, no, even bad news is you know, productive, or good news, or things like that. Yeah. No, you have to be able to rein in the asylum. You have to. You cannot continue to go on with this because what are you going to split and now make a third show, you know, to appease CM Punk? And look, I love CM Punk. Loved him, you know, even back in the ROH days. But you cannot continue to allow him in particular to have these, you know, backstage skirmishes, you know, and just try to smooth things over, you know, to appease his ego or the egos of other wrestlers. At some point, Tony has to stop him. And I don't, this definitely would not have happened under Vince McMahon. I don't think it happens under Triple H, you know, with Triple H, you know, at the helm right now. It just speaks to the dysfunction, you know, that continues to happen with AEW, and they really don't need this, especially when they are doing the type of shows that they're doing right now. We saw how great this card was tonight. We know next week in Chicago is going to be awesome at the United Center. You know, when you have these type of events, you have to be able to build off of that. And the only way you're going to be able to build off of that is that you have, for more or less a better term, a united locker room. I don't give a damn if they do hate each other, you know, in real life. Are you guys able to get in the ring and make money off of this? And now we've seen with CM Punk and the Elite, we're probably going to see with CM Punk and Jack Perry, you know, these entities not being able to, you know, squash whatever beef this is, and let's make money off of it. It goes back to Tony Khan. I will continue to stress that, you know, until the end of time. He has to be the one to rein all this in.
Yeah, I mean, that's just the bottom line. Yeah, you nailed it. Jerry Jarrett, the longtime Memphis promoter, said, like, yeah, you know, personal issues draw money. Who would say, yeah, Jack Perry and CM Punk had a backstage incident? Yeah, I don't want to see that. Well, yeah, you do want to see it. I mean, the thing is that's got us also has to stop is that if you're going to fight legitimately and there you guys are bitching and moaning at each other, then we need to put in the ring. I don't want to wrestle CM Punk. I don't want to see CM Punk. Then why are you continuing to complain about him or do side eye stuff or do slick shit on mm-hmm. social media? You know, you can't mm-hmm. you can't keep doing this. Either it's business or not. And if it's personal, that personal has to get into the ring. You got to work and work together so that way it helps the company overall. Otherwise, just like all these incidents happen. Like I put it this way, as I mentioned with UFC, you think Dana White wouldn't put that in the cage? Of course he would. There's no question that he would.
The main event.
Yeah,
it's the main event.
Exactly. Why is Conor McGregor still around in UFC? A guy that's been arrested several times and more trouble than probably the UFC is worth. But the point is, like, when you put him in a fight, no matter what's been going on, he can draw money. John Jones the same way in the UFC. Put him mm-hmm. in the cage, see what happens. Even though these guys probably shouldn't even be in the sport, they do it because there's money that could be made from it. So,
and as long as you can make money off of it, why not put it in the ring? Why not? CMFTR versus the Elite is the match that everybody wants to see. Why hasn't this happened yet? It's been a year now. Yeah, literally, it's been a year.
The last thing we'll talk about with Sting and Darby Allin against Christian Cage and Swerve Strickland. So this has to come out on Wednesday. At least it has to. I mean, if I'm Swerve and I get mic time, I'm going to do this. Man, my locks were hanging outside of the coffin. It did not close all the way because my locks were still hanging out. So not a victory. I would have that as a technicality. I'd have Prince Nana be able to draw that up, circle it like they do a replay. Hey, you think you guys had me in there, but my locks are hanging out. So it's not an official victory in the coffin match. No.
I thought I was the only one that saw that. I was like, wait a minute, match not over. This match isn't over. His dreadlocks are outside of the coffin.
That's right.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. I mean, if you want to, that angle writes itself. To where you could get a match between Swerve and Darby Allin. Like, hey, look, see, you see this on the TV. You see that? Just blow it up real big, you know, on Dynamite on Wednesday. You know, I demand a rematch. But, oh, definitely. Yeah, the match shouldn't have ended. His dreadlocks are out. It's a part of him. Say it.
Even if it was not part of the story, even if it was a mistake, it still should be like, hey, you see this right here? My locks are hanging out. Not closed. You can't bury somebody with somebody's locks out. It's got to be completely inside. So I want my
That's right.
You know?
That's right.
I just think that's funny. Chris Jericho against Will Ospreay. So my partners on Good Karma Wrestling were balking at this and saying, oh, nobody wants to see this match. This match is going to be, because I understand that Will Ospreay's a killer and he's crazy. Mm-hmm. And Chris Jericho, I've called him the Tom Brady of AEW in that he's done everything. He's just been tremendous as a real pro. When you need an adult in the room, Chris Jericho's been that. Think about all the stuff that you read, CJ, about AEW, the behind the scenes and people snapping each other. Chris Jericho, nothing. Nothing. He's a model citizen back there because he knows how to be the adult. He loses the match against Will Ospreay. And okay, 5-star match, 6-star match, no. Chris Jericho is an older cat. He can still be able to do some things in the ring. Mm-hmm. It wasn't embarrassing at all. Mm-hmm. But Will Ospreay is like, he is just a cut above, right? We're talking about top 5 wrestler in the world and Will Ospreay.
Oh, yeah.
Who just wrestled at Rev Pro the night before, which I wish I want to see anything Will Ospreay because he's just an amazing talent. But okay, there was some missed spots. Yeah, it's Chris Jericho. Mm-hmm. He's over 50. But you know what? It's still, they told a great story. And Jericho afterwards was pretty pissed off. So I don't know what that means afterwards. But I thought it was, a solid match. Again, not great, but it was solid. And it really was able to showcase what Ospreay can do.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I was listening in on you guys on Thursday, talking about the match. I myself thought, Chris is over 50. He's going to be able to do what he needs to do to make this match work. That we obviously knew we weren't getting the New Japan Will Ospreay. That was just going to go in and try to murder somebody in the ring. But they told an entertaining story. That German suplex that Jericho put on Ospreay on the apron, that was nasty stuff right there. That was a really cool spot. It was a quality match. I really enjoyed it. It was slowed down a little because obviously it had to be slowed down a little because of Jericho's age. But I don't think that took away from the story at all of what they were doing in the ring. That Sky Twister off the top rope from Will Ospreay, that's vintage Will Ospreay right there. He's, if I had to, like you said, put 5 or 10 guys that you would pay money to see, wrestle, Will Ospreay is right up there. He's right up there. He's top 5 for sure. Like, you want to pay money to see this guy get in the ring. He and Jericho had a pretty solid match. This was just kind of your classic, kind of old school, type of psychology. Will Ospreay knew he couldn't go like 100 miles per hour because, Jericho wasn't going to be able to keep up. I tell you though, had these two met, at both of their peaks, this is one of these 5-star, 6-star, classic matches that you want to see. But nonetheless, entertaining by both of these men.
Yeah, and so Ospreay's contract is up in New Japan pretty soon here, and I'm not saying he should automatically go to AEW because it is a logjam of talent, and it's very difficult for whatever reason for Tony Khan to tell the stories that I want him to tell because individually, Jay White's in this company now, Juice Robinson's in this company, I'm not saying that Ospreay would be less than, but I'm just saying that there is a guy there like him and Omega, Young Bucks, and FTR, so many others that really deserve time and to be for their stories to be told of why that they're solid. Not just, hey, we got Will Ospreay. Yeah, well, I mean, explain to Dubuque, Iowa, why Will Ospreay is special. That's kind of like a casual wrestling fan, right? So because ultimately the growth of AEW is about to expand. It's not about, oh, well, I'm smart, and I know these people are from being online and watching independent wrestling online. It's about being able to stretch it out, CJ, to let people know, here's why these wrestlers are special. Here's why they're in AEW. Not just because they're great wrestlers, but the behind the scenes of them as well. So I think all that matters as far as storytelling and growth.
Yeah, I agree with you. And, you know, some of the wrestlers you name, and then some of the wrestlers who really fly under the radar, who are talented, your Miros, your Powerhouse Hobbs, you know, your Ricky Starks, you know, that continue to fly under the radar because it's just so much talent inside AEW that everybody doesn't get the chance to tell, you know, the stories that they want to tell. And to add a Will Ospreay to the mix, yeah, can you get a bunch of dream matches that you would want to see? Sure. But what type of stories will Will be able to tell? But, you know, that checkbook from Tony Khan, you know, may be a bit too much to try to overcome, even for, you know, Will Ospreay. I know he loves the business. He loves to get in there and do all of these things. But, you know, that checkbook sometimes, you know, can make you make some business decisions.
I've got a stepson, bruv, and a wife, bruv. So he's fantastic. I love some Will Ospreay. Yeah. I don't care where he's wrestling. He's always a lot of fun to watch. House of Black takes on the Acclaimed and Billy Gunn as we got new Trios Tag Team Champions. So Daddy Ass was not there, but Billy Gunn was there. And I said,
yes, to myself, the badass.
Yeah, well, yeah, badass Billy Gunn. And I said to myself, self, yeah, Billy, I don't think we want to see Billy Gunn anymore. Because I'm just telling you, like, that guy's up in age. He looks great. But, I mean, it's kind of like, I don't know. I just, for him to say, no, you're not going to see Daddy Ass, you're going to see Billy Gunn. I'm like, what's the real difference? You're still, like, three steps behind. You're, another older gentleman in the ring.
Yeah. He
looks great. And Billy Gunn, the Acclaimed win. I thought that one of the highlights is just the idea that House of Black hands the Acclaimed and Billy Gunn the Trios Tag Team Championships at the end. A little sportsmanship.
Yeah, a little surprising. That's not something you'd expect from House of Black to be able to do that. That seemed a little out of character for them, you know, their whole brand. But good match nonetheless. I'm like you. I really don't need to see Billy Gunn in the ring too much. you know, at his age, he looks great. But yeah, he is a few steps behind everyone else. And maybe this is his swan song, you know, one last title run, you know, in the sun, you know, before he finally calls it a career. But overall, another solid match. For them, you know, we've seen House of Black in these trio matches go with some other trios before. This seemed, obviously, with Billy Gunn in there, a step below some of these other trios matches they've been in, but still solid nonetheless.
Billy Gunn's pretty much in there to take the pin, either to take the pin or maybe be there at the end. But the Acclaimed ends up winning it with Billy Gunn. So new Trios Tag Team Champions. Let me just say something about the House of Black before we move on to the main event. And don't forget, you can go to youtube.com/goodkarmawrestling. Hit that subscribe button. We really want to be able to expand on the YouTube end of things with our show that we have every Thursday, 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 Pacific. So as always, we appreciate your support wherever you are listening and watching our show here as we do our all-in post show. The House of Black did a really good job as Trios champions, CJ. I think they really did a great job. Mm-hmm. I think that, you know, we look at those three guys and we know that they all could be solo talent and could be singles champions. Yeah. But I think together as a unit, I think that they did a really good job as Trios champions to the point where I was like, God, who can really beat them? And they took on a lot of different people, a lot of different opponents. And I know their style's different than most in the company. But I thought that they were fantastic as tag team champions, six-man.
Yeah, they really were great champions. Maybe they can make another run as a trios with a trios title. I really would love to see Malakai Black get a singles run. I mean, he's just that damn good to me. Really enjoyed his work when he was over at NXT. Just to see him kind of get a singles push, I would really like. Buddy Murphy, you know, same way, underrated performer in the ring. Would like to see him get a push as well. But again, it's like we talked about before, you know, trying to get these performers to be able to tell their individual stories. And sometimes you have to be put into a trio, you know, to kind of make that work. But I would love to see really all three of them to make some singles runs and have some good singles matches.
Well, you know, we saw at the House of Black, there's four of them there, and they're, the fourth member got woman handled.
Well, you know, it happens. It's not the ring.
Come on now, that ain't right. I guess she's been getting her comeuppance for a while for interference, right?
Yeah, it's been a long time coming. So, yeah, that was another interesting spot in here.
We get to the main event, my friend. It is Adam Cole against Maxwell Jacob Friedman. Friedman comes in as the AEW champion. Okay. So here's what we knew. We look at that one of those last few interviews from Adam Cole, and he starts to get heated up. He starts to get a little angry, and he gets a little pissed off because people think he's going to backstab MJF. So I think it was clear coming into today's pay-per-view that Adam Cole was going to be the aggressive one first, because Maxwell Jacob Friedman is just in love. He just loves the idea that he has a friend in Adam Cole. Nothing's going to happen there because he's got a friend. But you can start to see the levels of the personality of Adam Cole, the heel Adam Cole that we know, start to come out. And we saw the aggressiveness early in this matchup.
We did. There were a couple of moments in the match where MJF needed to pull the trigger on a move, but for whatever reason couldn't, because this is my best friend. I can't do this to my best friend. And Adam Cole, being the cerebral person that he is like, okay, I'll do it. Because I am that person, and I am the type of person that can and will pull the trigger on that. So yeah, a great storytelling by both of these men. Telling a story, MJF just wanting to have a match with his friend, but not wanting his friend to get hurt, or, you know, let's just have a match straight up, and, you know, let's just wrestle. And Adam Cole's like, nah, fam, I'm really here to like win.
Yes.
and if I got to step over you to do it, I'll do it. So that was pretty cool. And then of course we used to see back in the days of NWA, we get to our 30-minute time limit, bell rings, double pin. Oh, it's a pinfall. Good night. No, we can't do that. We can't do that. As soon as that double pin happened, it was like, ah, Shades of Dusty.
That's a podcast you and I have to do separately. I have some information I want to tell you now that Dusty's gone, long and gone, how the Rock and Roll Express felt about Dusty and his booking. But nonetheless, you know what, man? So as we watch the aggressiveness of Adam Cole, as we watch, dude, that brainbuster on the stairs, listen, let me tell you something. You need a pro to be able to do that move. It's a little sleight of hand there, because a few inches over, that's hitting the edge of the stairs on MJF, and that could have been really serious. That's a dangerous ass move to do. I didn't like that. I understand why it happened, because it kind of showed Adam Cole's for real. Like, I know what MJF's doing, but I'm trying to beat his ass and win this championship, even though we're friends.
Yeah.
You know, better than you, baby. But that brainbuster on the stairs, I want to get your thoughts on that, because that was a dangerous ass move. That's one of the big moves of the night, I thought.
Yeah, you know, it was one of the big moves of the night. And when he was setting that up, I was like, oh boy, this can go really, really wrong at this point. Kudos to Adam for being able to pull that move off. But, you know, I think there's some other spots that you could have done that didn't have to be that dangerous. That was that was one of those spots there. Like you said, if that goes wrong, man, that would have really derailed just not only the main event, but just the whole card itself. But, you know, that's some of those things where we talk about the soft style of WWE in some of their matches. But, you know, the thing is, you've got this story that's, you know, kind of come together and really been hot. You don't need to necessarily pull dangerous, you know, stunts like that, you know, to tell a story within the ring. My heart was like coming out of my chest at that spot, because I was like, oh boy, we've seen spots like this, you and I both, where that, you know, goes horrifically wrong. So luckily it did not go wrong. He pulled it off. Adam Cole is enough of a professional where he could pull that move off and make sure everyone's safe. But, you know, that's not always a chance you want your stars out there taken.
Oh boy. And so you mentioned a double pin for a draw. As you mentioned, back in the day, that would have been good night, everybody, and people would have been gone,
right,
and pissed off. And like, but you're not doing that in front of 81,000 people. That's not happening.
Right. Right?
So, you know, in those spots, and this is where AEW did a really good job with the storytelling. The idea that they dedicated the whole MJF thing. MJF still has devilish qualities, but yet he didn't want to do the tombstone on the table. And shout out to AEW. Here's, again, a little nuance, right? So I've been noticing on Collision, on AEW Collision, that the setup is right there at ringside. They don't get that. They don't do that for Dynamite or for Rampage, but for Collision, it's been there. And you've seen the wrestlers come close to the table, and, you know, obviously there was an email, do not put your opponent through the table. Because the table's legit. It's not one of those breakaway things you see on Raw and SmackDown. This is a legit table. And both guys are on the table, and MJF's like, I want to do this tombstone, but I can't do it because he's my best friend. And it's kind of like, my God, man, you went from the devil to the softest dude in the company, right? This is the story they're telling, though, CJ. Like,
yes,
MJF is all in. Like, I'm not going to do this to my friend. And guess what? Adam Cole's like, I'll do it to you. And so there's the difference. There's how the story's been told. I think that's brilliant.
It was one of the more cooler spots of the evening, really. Just this reluctance. It kind of harkened me back to Flair versus Shawn Michaels at Flair's WWE retirement match, where throughout the match, Shawn had, you know, Flair in predicaments, and he was ready to like put Flair out of his misery, but he couldn't pull the trigger because of how much love he had for Flair. But Flair was able, being the dirtiest player in the game, was able to pull the trigger, you know, and reverse things on Shawn. This was pretty much in that realm of Adam Cole being that guy. Like, I'm that guy. Like, we may be friends, but don't get it twisted. I'm that guy that will do anything and everything necessary to win. And that they continue to tell that story up until the end, where, you know, Roderick Strong comes in. And he's running interference, and he's telling Adam, do it, you know, finish it, you know, win this match. And then for a second, you know, Adam hesitates, you know, and that also, you know, again, just kind of furthers the story a little bit, because everyone's expecting this turn. Everyone's expecting Adam to you know, be the Adam Cole that we all know and love, this vindictive heel. But Adam, for that split second, you know, has that moment of hesitancy, and that allows, you know, MJF to get the roll-up win after a bunch of like crazy false finishes, which you were at some point like, man, is Adam's going to go over here? And they just kind of went back and forth. Really a hell of a match. I love that match from top to bottom.
Well, you know, Roderick Strong involving himself, well, like you said, is very interesting. And it's like, you know, I think it's solidified now that Roderick Strong's got to feel like, okay, I can't get through to Adam Cole. I'm just going to be with my new friends, and that's it. Because it was almost like the last chance for Adam Cole to connect himself with Roderick Strong. And it's not going to happen, because the relationship between MJF and Adam Cole is too strong. But as I mentioned, we did get some tendencies here. But first of all, let me just give a shout out to Bryce Rensburg, because that guy knows I take a bump. And he took several of them in this matchup. I think Bryce is a former wrestler too, so he knows how to take the Panama Sunrise. He took another bump in the matchup as well. So drama with him. But what's up with MJF? He had the Dynamite Diamond Ring. Here's what's so compelling and so strange about this whole thing. MJF's like, no, that's my friend. I'm not going to, you know, I'm not going to put him through the table and blah, blah, blah. But he still was armed, wasn't he? He was still protecting himself just in case. Yes, like, he's a scumbag, but at the same time, even though he loves Adam Cole, he, just in case, had a Dynamite Diamond ring and held the tights and those roll-ups, like, you know, late in the matchup. Mm-hmm. Like, he's still that guy, but yet still has respect. And then, you know, it ends up being a roll-up. And this is really the MJF era of just, like, just kind of, like, not spectacular finish, unspectacular finishes. It ends up on a roll-up, this whole thing. This is who he is, though, and this is what it was in the 60s and 70s. It would be a roll-up like that to be able to win a match. Same thing here. It's not unspectacular. It's not a real finish. It's just kind of like, okay, I got the best of you. Roll up, one, two, three. And that's how the match ended.
And you know what? I didn't have a problem with it. I did not have a problem with it at all. It's the MJF way.
Yeah.
It's basically been his thing, you know, since he's been in AEW, and I've never had a problem with it. It just adds, you know, more to his character. Do what you got to do to get a win. Do what you have to do to get the win. Yes, he had the diamond ring ready just in case. Mm-hmm. Because at the end of the day, that world title still means everything to MJF. It means everything to him. Yet Cole's his new best friend, and he wants to have this partnership and festival or friendship and all this other nonsense. But still, at the end of the day, at the bottom line, it's all about that gold that remains around his waist. Loved it. Compelling. Just really adding more dynamic to MJF.
So, it's just funny how this works, CJ. So, I do recall, and I know you recall this as well, when MJF and Adam Cole fell short of winning the tag team championships against FTR, Cole's like, it's okay. Hey, man, we're still together. We're still friends. It's okay. It's all right. Hey, listen. And then you had MJF crying in the corner pretty much like, I blew it. I blew it for us. We should be the tag team champions. This is ridiculous. And then it's funny how history works, right? You flip it, and then today Adam Cole loses. And MJF says, it's okay, man. We're still ROH Tag Team Champions. And there is Adam Cole throwing the championship away, the ROH Championship. Mm-hmm. And there's MJF saying, oh, you know what? I knew this was all BS. All this, you just want to be able to be the AEW champion. All you wanted was this belt. Well, here, take the belt if that's what you want so badly. And just like that, it's funny. We just saw this a few weeks ago, and now it's flipped now that MJF won the matchup.
Yeah. Again, we started off at the beginning of this thing talking about AEW and storytelling. This was just kind of like the chef's kiss on this. Yeah. Just a great job by both guys being able to further the story along, being able to recall back, you know, losing the opportunity to win tag team gold, and now just flipping the story. And now it's Adam Cole now, the one dejected, you know, mad. Pissed off, you know, that he didn't get the win that he wanted. But, you know, here's MJF. Man, we're still ROH Tag Team Champions. We still won this thing together. We can still do this. We can be better than you, baby. And now it's Adam Cole once again having to make that decision of, man, I think I really do want this. It was really perfect storytelling, again, by both guys. This is AEW's, obviously, their number one story. For the promotion, and how long do they keep it going is the question, because everyone's expecting a turn. Everyone's expecting Adam Cole to do what he always does, and that's do whatever he needs to do to get the upper hand on somebody. But I mean, this thing is hot right now. I mean, this buddy, this friendship between the two is super hot. So if you're Tony Khan, you keep it going for a little while, even extend it past, you know, All Out next week, maybe push it, you know, toward the end of the year before you have your blow off.
Yeah, I think that you keep that going. And, you know, the one thing that always works in wrestling is strange bedfellows. Mm-hmm. And it works all the time. Right? It's always like the odd mix, the odd couple as a tag team. And can they really get along? I mean, we've seen this for a long time, you know. Rock and Austin, you know, Rock and Sock Connection, all this kind of stuff. Can two people that are so opposite, can they get along and be a tag team? Mm-hmm. And so you know, what's to say that MJF finally goes back to being the devil? Now, here's the thing. Here's a guy here that is so talented, CJ. He's so talented as a babyface or a heel. He's just been amazing. And because the people are with him, the people want to cheer him, but he's always been so rude and so crass at people. And so here he is as a babyface. I mean, almost squeaky clean babyface, in which he didn't want to be able to pull the trigger on Adam Cole. But it just shows you how talented he is. Either way, they could be, he could be either character and still get over.
That's the mark of a talented performer. That person is able to be able to tell the story, whether heel or face or tweener, whatever the case may be. MJF is just that talented of a performer that he can, whatever you kind of put in front of him, he can sink his teeth into and make it work and make it compelling. And, you know, he's it's the reason why they've got the gold around him, because he's able to tell these types of stories and make it compelling. He's over as hell. We know that just by how he is in the ring, whether he's a face or a heel. But it really speaks to him as a performer, and having the knowledge of the business and being able to, you know, tweak his character when needed. MJF, obviously one of my favorites, regardless of wrestling promotion.
So as we wrap this up, Don Callis has said in the press conference here in London after the All In show, All Out show. No, it's All In, sorry. Don Callis wants Kenny Omega against Takeshita at All Out. That's what I was confused. He wants to take him on in Chicago. Callis says that Kenny has not won a big singles match since their split. So Tony Khan announces it for AEW All Out. We were just talking about that, and now we're going to get it.
Mm-hmm. That's all we asked for.
Yeah, so there's some breaking news there. It's funny, you and I were just talking about that. Hey, some of these guys have to spin off into singles matches because it'll rock the house, and now we're going to get that. Saraya, tearful in her press conference, saying that she thought she'd never wrestle again, and she always wanted to be part of AEW since it started. And now she's a champion. Again, even though you and I are kind of like thumbs in the middle about this, the bar, we're a little thumbs in the middle about it. We're just kind of like, you know, she's in London. She's in front of her family. She wins the champ. Now, again, I don't know what kind of champion she's going to be. I think she's just been okay since she's returned. But she's very tearful in her press conference here that I'm reading. So she's just happy to be a champion.
Yeah. You know, like I said before, we'll see where this goes. I think probably going forward from a storyline perspective, you've got something kind of already made between her and Tony Storm and Ruby Soho, where probably the three of them will probably end up clashing for the AEW Women's Championship going forward. You've got a nice little story to tell there. Outside of that, we'll see what else happens with Saraya, because she's a talented performer, but her run, you know, to this point has been kind of so-so. So, you know, maybe this is this thing with the social outcast and how this whole thing implodes, you know, maybe the vehicle for her to kind of really like rev up, because she's, you know, still capable of putting on matches, but she's really going to need the someone across from her to really be able to elevate her to the next level.
We get this matchup as well, Orange Cassidy and Penta. That's set up for this week as well.
I know your co-hosts are going to love that one.
Absolutely. Like, so I mean, I'm all for it, but it's like Orange Cassidy, he has been that dude, a workhorse. Some would say, oh, he's out there every week, but clearly he gets ratings no matter time. When he comes out there, people want to see what he's going to do, and he has improved so much. Another guy I didn't get when he first came to AEW, I'm like, what does this do with his hands in his pockets? And how come he has no charisma? He actually, here's how you know. When little kids dress like Orange Cassidy and they respect what he does in the ring, I get it now. And he has evolved to me as a performer in AEW?
Yeah, absolutely. I too, like you, I didn't understand the whole shtick, you know, when he first started. But I just kind of took a step back, just paid attention to him a little more. He always gets, you know, pops every time he comes out. Obviously, the connection that he's made with the fan base is real, and it's strong, because they really root for this dude and they pull for this dude. And he puts on really good matches. Like you said, he really has improved. So it's interesting. I'll be interested in looking at that match as well.
So I'm still, as we do the show, obviously, I was looking for some news. Looks like everything is closing down with the press conference here. And again, the lead story is 81,000 people, CJ, 81,000 people, 1,035. A new attendance record for professional wrestling paid. That is a pro wrestling record. There's been big crowds. You got to just understand where I come from and where CJ comes from. And look, we've seen every WrestleMania. We've seen the big crowds all over the country for WrestleMania. We've seen World Class in the sold out Cotton Bowl or Dallas Stadium at the time. And, you know, some years good, some years not so good. We've seen Junkyard Dog, at least read about it, Junkyard Dog and Michael Hayes at the top of the card at the Superdome, selling out the Superdome. They say selling out. At least it was a great crowd. For a regional promotion, yeah. You know, you get 25,000, 30,000 people in the Superdome. That's still pretty strong. And they had Superdome records in the past for Mid-South. Mm-hmm. And you just think about, like, all the wrestling that we've seen in North America. And then you get this one here where we were thinking for years, wow, there are no big events in the UK anymore. Not since, and we kept talking about 92 with Bret Hart and Davey Boy Smith, right? We kept referring to it like, wow, you know, WWE won't do it. How come WWE won't do it? Well, because of cost, pal, and because, you know, the time difference. I heard all kinds of excuses. And Tony Khan was like, yeah, I don't understand. What do you mean time difference? What are you talking about? Like, no, we're going to have this show because I have a soccer team and that's Fulham. And I know that, I mean, at first, right, Wembley Stadium. You mean like the arena? No, the stadium, right? And for them to be able to put their balls on the table and like, yeah, we'll draw. And I remember when it first came out and I was talking to my co-host on Good Karma Wrestling. They're like, you know, what if they get like 30,000? I go, no. I said, it's the UK. They're going to sell it out. No. Yeah. And the other thing about that is, and I just want to get your thoughts on this, is that it's AEW, CJ, that says, we're coming to Wembley, and did not have a main event in place, did not have a card in place. Mm-hmm. That's when you know that you're growing as a company, that AEW is coming to town. They're going to be at Wembley? Oh, I got to be part of that. I got to see what that looks like. Because that's not what we saw here today with MJF and Adam Cole. It's an extension of a story. It's not the fun. You think a crowd like that should be the final part of the story. Mm-hmm. This ain't Hogan Andre. This is not Rock Hogan. This is not Austin Rock or Austin Michaels. This is just an extension of a story. People are saying, yeah, I'll fly overseas to see it. No, I'll be in London. I'll go to see it. So this is why today, and we're doing this special show, because we just saw history today. No matter the card, we just saw many fans say, I love professional wrestling and I want to see this.
It speaks to this thing we love called professional wrestling, and it speaks to the worldwide reach that it really has. That you could take a stadium like Wembley Stadium and pack over 81,000 people. Like you said, they announced it several months ago. Nothing was in place. Tony Khan just made the announcement. Hey, we're coming to London. We're going to be at Wembley Stadium. We're going to be there in the end of August. You know, get your tickets. There was never a question of who was going to be there. We were all asking these questions. You know, who's going to be on the card? Who's going to show up? Would it be this person or that person? The audience in London didn't care. They didn't care because it was about being able to see professional wrestling up front live in the UK. And for the life of me, I have never understood why it has taken so long for WWE and even other promotions to go over there, because we know how rabid of a fan base that is over there in the UK, how much they're into professional wrestling, how smart they are about professional wrestling, the knowledge of professional wrestling that they have, the lineage, you know, that comes out of professional wrestling in the UK. It's all there. It's tailor-made, you know, to have these big, you know, tentpole type of events. It's something, you know, and I'm actually glad that AEW has put his cards on the table and be like, you know what? We're going to be there every year. We're going there every year. We'll see you there next year. And we're going to make this a yearly thing to be able to bring this thing called professional wrestling to you guys in the UK.
On a simple name called All In.
Yeah. You know, nothing extravagant, nothing, you know, wow, you know, or anything like that. Hey, All In. Come in, get your tickets, you know, come see this thing, you know, called AEW, you know, All Elite Wrestling. We're going to provide a show for you. And the thing about Tony Khan, where you talked about the time difference, what, 0 hour started at 11 a.m. Central. It was done by, what, 4:30 p.m.? You know, 5.5 hours. You know, you still got the rest of your day to go through. If you're here in the States, you know, watching this thing. If you're in London, you still, you know, can do some things at night if you want to. Tony Khan, to his credit, understood the market. He understood the need for this to be able to put more eyeballs on professional wrestling. And he went out there and he took that risk. He obviously opened up the checkbook to make it happen. And I think it's something that, you know, other promotions, you know, really need to, you know, take a page out of.
We do have some closing comments, but the last thing I want to ask you is about your letter grade. So on Good Karma Wrestling on Twitter, and some of you are watching through on Twitter or X, GKW_wrestling, what's your letter grade for All In? 40% of you say an A, 27% of you say a B, 14% say a C, and 19% of you are haters because you have a D. I'm glad the WWE contingent has been able to jump in. 81,000 people, at least 5 of these matches were top shelf, at least 5, 90% say it's D. Well, you know, can I just tell you, jealousy is a stinky cologne. Why are you jealous? That's the only reason why. I should have just not even put D on there, because this show did not deserve a D. But let me get your letter grade, sir. What do you have?
I think this was a really, really, this was a really great card. It's very least B+ to A-. That's bare minimum. If you have anything less than that, I don't know what you were watching tonight. Because from top to bottom, this was just a really great card. We talked about FTR and the Bucks. The main event, obviously Adam Cole and MJF, both of your trios matches were pretty solid, although I preferred the Bullet Code Club against Golden Elite a little more with the trios matches. Jericho and Ospreay put on a really solid match. I mean, you could look to, like you said, at least 5 matches where you can run that back at any time. B+ to A-. I probably lean more toward A- for this card. It was really, really good. And that's not even including the 2 matches for the 0 hour, which would, you know, if you looked at them, I will watch this as soon as we're done, those 2 matches. But if you've got anything under a B+, what the hell were you watching? Those people who voted D, I you know, There's nothing I can say to you. Just go outside and breathe. Yeah, go outside, breathe the mirror.
Yeah, it's WWE fans, and that's fine. A little bit. Yeah. Listen, in closing, I'll just say this: it felt like a B+ pay per view, but that has nothing to do with the 81,000 people that they drew. how much excitement there was. Was it a late build? Yes, it was a late build. But as I always say on almost every show, when you get it in the ring, it should pop. When you get in the ring, it should be fine, because there's nothing like a wrestling pay-per-view where everyone is on the same page and they are able to take it up several notches than what you see on TNT and TBS or USA Network or Fox. These wrestlers understand, okay, the crowd that we're doing this in front of is bigger. The pay-per-view people are bigger. So we've got to be able to pull out all the stops. We got to be as smooth as possible, as demonstrative as possible, as entertaining as possible, so that way they will come back. This is a very usual time for AEW, in which they have this show at Wembley, and they're going to be in Chicago pretty much all week here, Wednesday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. They're going to be around all week, and they got to be able to pick up on and keep the momentum going from this. I mean, this has been a great show, but they know they got to do even more so. And I just think that wrestling's in a great spot. And I'll say what others will not say, CJ, and that is Tony Khan should thank Roman Reigns, the Usos, Paul Heyman, Sami Zayn, Kevin Owens, and all those people with the bloodline. Because if you think that wrestling's in a renaissance just because AEW drew 81,000 people, no. It started with them the last two or three years with this story. And wrestling's cool again. So here's the bottom line. Everyone that has a good company is growing across the board. WWE for this whole bloodline thing and how they're getting, you know, good numbers on Fox and USA and their pay-per-views. And they're traveling all over the country now to be able to have these big shows. From there, for whatever New Japan's doing, whatever the indies are doing, that those are growing because it starts in New York. The old adage in wrestling is, if New York's doing well, everybody eats. New York, that was the old phrase, meaning Connecticut, meaning whatever happens in Madison Square Garden, everyone eats. And back in the day, if New York's doing well, World Class is doing well, Florida's doing well, Crockett's doing well in the Carolinas, Portland's doing well with Don Owen, LA's doing well, and all the points in between. Indianapolis doing well, Detroit and the Sheik. All those guys did well. Like, our attendance is up. Well, why do you think that is? It's because at the time, Hulkamania was cool. And so because now everybody was getting paid. Same thing's happening here. This is not by coincidence. It's because everything is raising the bar in professional wrestling. And I'm here for it. I'm glad that you and I could do the show because the renaissance is here. No more John Cena and then turn the TV off. This is wrestling across the board's cool. From the indies all the way across, and it's pretty awesome.
It is awesome, and you're right in that regard of the bloodline story and how it's manufactured itself over the last 3 years to really be able to, like you said, not just pick up business for the WWE. I mean, that storyline was like the hottest storyline in all of professional wrestling, so much so that you've got people outside of who aren't even like wrestling fans, like casual fans, you know, acknowledging how cool wrestling is right now. It was a few months ago, I went to a movie with my wife and I had a Roman Reigns Acknowledge Me t-shirt on. And as we're getting ready to go into the theater, you know, one of the people working there is like, I acknowledge my tribal chief. You know, it's just, you know, it's just one of those things, you know, where that story helped like catapult, like you said, wrestling back into being cool. It's not this fringe, you know, sport that you kind of watched in the dark and you really didn't talk about it, you know, with anybody, you know, and now you're just walking around, you're seeing people with wrestling shirts on all the time, and it's cool and it's normal. And like I said, when Stamford, Connecticut is eating good, AEW is eating good, MLW is eating good, Impact's eating good, New Japan, you know, all of these wrestling promotions now get this type of attention and spotlight that it may not have gotten 5 years ago, 10 years ago. So, again, if you're a fan of professional wrestling, this is an awesome time for you. You've got so many options to choose from. You've got so many athletes, entertainers to watch and be fans of. It is a great, great time to be a wrestling fan. I'm happy. You and I both are longtime lovers and watchers of wrestling. Very first entertainment event I ever went to was a wrestling show. My father took me to the Rosemont Horizon. It's Allstate Arena for you youngins who don't know. The Rosemont Horizon to watch Greg Gagne's promotion.
AWA, yeah.
AWA. The main event was a 20-man battle royal. Nick Bockwinkel was there. Hogan was there. Vern Gagne, Greg Gagne, Greg the Hammer Valentine, Bobby the Brain Heenan was there that night. So that's a 40-year love story for me, for professional wrestling. And to see where it is now, it's awesome. I love it. I love it. I absolutely love it.
Tell people where they can find your blog. I'm sure there'll be a write-up about this on the report.
Yes, there will. The CTJ Report, CTJReport.net. You can find it anywhere and everywhere. You can also find me on Twitter or X or whatever the hell they're calling this place now, at CTJ14. Yeah, we'll definitely have a follow-up on what was an amazing card tonight.
Good Karma Wrestling every Thursday, 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 Pacific. Hit that YouTube as well, youtube.com. Look for Good Karma Wrestling there. Hit that subscribe button. There's so many interviews that you might have missed that we've done. Lately, we just talked to The Miz, which was an interesting conversation. Jake the Snake Roberts and so many others. Starcast is right around the corner as well in the Chicagoland area. We'll be there doing a live show as well. So hope that you'll be able to connect with us on YouTube. And, of course, keep voting on GKW_wrestling on Twitter. Your thoughts about the show that took place today, the all-in show from Wembley Stadium, 81,035 people plus, as Tony Khan says, about 90,000 people probably with the ticket takers and everything else. But it's just a great event. We had to do this special for you, the wrestling fan. Make sure you share this video with your favorite wrestling fan as well. So for CJ Taylor, I'm Jonathan Hood. Thanks for watching our GKW All In Pulse show, and we will talk to you on Thursday for more Good Karma Wrestling. So long, everybody.